teaching, preaching 43 years. And I am still nervous as all get out every time I get up to teach a class or to preach a lesson. You wouldn't think you would you? But I do. And, you know, I want to teach what's correct. I want to help your faith, and I just get nervous. So I don't think it'll ever go away. And I hope it doesn't, because it kind of keeps you on your toes. I appreciated Mark last week. He started Esther chapter 1 for us. But what I really appreciate about him going through chapter 1, he got to say all the big hard names. You know, I don't have to deal with that tonight. I'll have a few, but not anything like he had there in chapter 1. And I really appreciated what he said at the beginning of the class, that, you know, don't go on the internet to try to find your teachings, because you can find anything you want. I'm telling you, you can just type in the word baptism and you're going to come up with several different ideas. Let's let Scripture define everything for us. And we'll do the same thing with Esther. Because there are a lot of scholarly, and I use that loosely, people that say Esther does not belong in Scripture because it doesn't mention the term God. But you know what it tells me? They don't know what they're talking about. Even though God's name's not mentioned, there is faith and there is a purpose of it. They're not getting it because they're not reading it close enough. And we'll see that in just a few moments. When we look at the book of Esther, and I'm going to try to keep things a little more concise here. The book of Esther falls between Ezra. The first six chapters of Ezra, and then chapter 7 starts a whole other process. Esther falls between chapter 6 and chapter 7. What happened is that Isaiah and Jeremiah prophesied that the Babylonians were going to take down Judah. And they did. 586 B.C., Jerusalem was utterly destroyed. They carried off many into captivity on the sieges they gave to it. And so then you hear these people that were taken back to Babylonia. There's a king by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. Most of us know that. He was, at the time, he was the captor. Well, God had already always promised, and in Jeremiah, he tells them, you're going to go into captivity, but I will restore you. Because you see, throughout their captivities, there was always a remnant of faithful Israel. And God was not going to let down that remnant part. He's going to keep his word. And so Nebuchadnezzar comes through, and there's where you find Daniel. Well, in 539 B.C., Medo-Persia takes over Babylonians. And they become the next great nation. When you get into the book of Daniel, and Daniel is something we'll study on our Sunday morning class in the upcoming weeks on the book of Revelation. But you remember when Daniel was in captivity and he stood before King Nebuchadnezzar and King Nebuchadnezzar had that dream? Daniel explains the dream. And in that dream, Daniel says, here's what it means. God revealed it. There's this great kingdom. You, King Nebuchadnezzar, are the head of Babylon. There's coming another great kingdom that's going to take over everything. Medo-Persia. And they're going to do their job and they will be a great kingdom. Having said that, I want you to come over real quick to Isaiah chapter 44. And I find this is one of the most incredible things. I don't know why it always just strikes me. Isaiah 44. Isaiah 44, he's talking about Judah is going to come under siege by the Babylonians. But in Isaiah 44, verse 8, he says, "It is I, God, who says of Cyrus, he is my shepherd." I said 28. Sorry. Man, why? Kick me, would you? 28, I'm sorry. "It is I who says of Cyrus, he is my shepherd. And he will perform all of my desire. And he declares of Jerusalem, she will be built. And of the temple, your foundation will be laid." God says this about who? Cyrus. Cyrus is the first king of Medo-Persia. Cyrus has not even been born. And here's Isaiah given his name that God declares, "I'm going to have him. He's going to be my shepherd." And you know what he's going to do? What Cyrus ends up doing? They're going to let my people go back to Jerusalem and they're going to lay the foundation of the temple. And so it's under Medo-Persia that God calls by name. After Medo-Persia comes the Greeks. That's who, I don't want to say the names yet. That's who the people of Medo-Persia or the king goes after the Greeks. And then a fourth kingdom will be Rome. All ahead of time. And so here they are. Well, now we know the name. Now, as we get to Esther here, and I said Ezra, it falls between Ezra chapter 6 and Ezra chapter 7. You know what Ezra's doing in the first six chapters? They're relaying the foundations of the temple in Jerusalem. Cyrus, King Cyrus of Persia, has granted them to go back to lay the temple to the God of heaven. And then between beginning in chapter 7 of Ezra, from chapter 6 to chapter 7, there is a 58-year gap. That's pretty incredible to see that. It's in this 58-year gap between 6 and 7, this is where Esther comes in. She's between that. And she gets to fulfill that. And so, when we get to Ezra chapter 7 through 10, when you read those, there is where Ezra comes on the scene. And he calls God's people, the faithful, "You need to repent." And they turn back to the Lord. Well, now that we've come to the book of Ezra, or Esther, I'm sorry, that falls between Ezra. Boy, there's too many E's here, isn't there? Trying to keep it all straight. But now we come to the capital of Medo-Persia, Susa. That's the capital. And this is where Esther is sent. There's a king. But, you know, after, I want to make sure I get my kings right. Okay. There's four Persian kings. Cyrus is the first one. Then comes Darius, the second one. And then Xerxes, and Xerxes is King Ahasuerus, where Esther comes in. And then Artaxerxes is the last one that you can find through the history books. Well, these are the four kings. And so when you talk about Xerxes, the first, that's the Greek name. King Ahasuerus, that's his Babylonian name. But his Greek name is Xerxes. So they're one and the same. The purpose of the book of Ezra, or keeps calling Ezra, Esther, The purpose of the book of Esther is the faithfulness of God to His remnant. The promises that He made. And this is going to play out very clear in the book. This is not a book of history. This is a book of salvation history. A lot of times we approach these things just as historical. This is about salvation history and how God kept His word and He worked all these things out. So, King Ahasuerus, he wants to attack Greece, take down the Greeks. That's his next conquest in all of this. And so he ends up and he has this big banquet. 6 months. 6 months of partying. And he brings all the diplomats in and he's having them look at all the beauty of the Persians. And he's trying to draw in to show that this is the beauty. And I want you to join with me. Or we're going to go after Greeks. And I'm going to need your help. So he's trying to rally all these other nations and all these other diplomats to come stand behind him. And so in chapter 1, with his 6 months of feasting, 7 days, a week of banqueting, showing off all of his splendor and all of his greatness and all of his beauty, he wants his trophy wife, Vashti. I want to put you on display before all these other people. I want you to make yourself up, and I want you to come and show your beauty. It offends her. It offends her. What does she do? She refused. How did King Ahasuerus react? He got very angry about it. So he calls his 7 closest counselors. Come here. What are we going to do about this? Queen Vashti has said no. And they said, we got a plan. We got a plan for you. And the plan is this. Look at verse 19 of chapter 1. If it pleases the king, let a royal edict be issued by him, and let it be written in the law of Persia and Media, so that it cannot be repealed, that Vashti may no longer come into the presence of King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal position to another who is more worthy than she. Yeah, we're going to come under Persian law. And that law states, whatever is written down and whatever is put into law, no one can repeal it. Now you find the very same thing when Daniel 6, Daniel does the same thing. Daniel is under Persia rule at this time because Babylon has fallen. And the same thing they wanted to do to Daniel in chapter 6. They saw him praying to God of heaven and they wanted to strike Daniel down, but there wasn't anything in the laws of the Persians that they could get Daniel on. So you know what they did? They go to the king, yeah, and they said, you make an edict. Let's put this thing in the law. It can't be repealed. If there is any person ever found praying to another god, death. Oh, that sounded good. That sounded good. They had Daniel trapped. And of course, we know he prayed. They caught him. Where does he go? Lion's den. This is Persian law. So they put in Persian law. And Vashti, according to what we read in chapter 1, she's a beautiful woman. And so he's angry. Maybe he's drunk too. Who knows? There's a lot of partying. But he wants to deal Vashti a blow. Because his counselor said, if she can defy you as king, what do you think the other women in our nation is going to do? They're going to defy their husbands too. So let's put it in writing. And in that writing, King Ahasuerus, you can find you another queen. And that brings us to chapter 2. Verse 1. And after these things, when the anger of King Ahasuerus had subsided, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what had been decreed against her. You read that, what does that sound like? What does it sound like to you? He remembered her and the decree. There's a remorse. But it can't be changed. Verse 2. Then the king's attendants who served him said, let beautiful young virgins be brought, sought for the king. Verse 3. Let the king appoint overseers in all the provinces of his kingdom that they may gather every beautiful young virgin to the citadel of Susa, to the harem, and to the custody of Haggai, the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women, and let their cosmetics be given to them. Verse 4. Then let the young lady who pleases the king be queen in the place of Vashti. And the matter pleased the king, and he did accordingly. The plan is laid. Keep this in mind as we read through Esther. We're talking about a super ungodly nation. We're talking about laws that came into effect that they're not thinking in terms of God. So keep that in mind as you read and how things operate. Because they're having to operate under this Persian king and Persian law. Continue on. Verse 5. Now there was at the citadel in Susa a Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. Now guess who we have introduced? Mordecai, he's what? He's Jewish. He's of the tribe of Benjamin. Verse 6. Here's about Mordecai, continues. Who had been taken into exile from Jerusalem with the captives, who had been in exile with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had exiled. He was bringing up Hadasha, that's it. That is Esther. Hadasha. That is her Persian name. Jewish name. Let me put it that way. That's her Jewish name, her Persian name. We're going to get it down here in just a second. Hadasha is her Jewish name. Esther is her Persian name. Okay? I got it. I had to get it down in my head. Sorry about that. Continue on. Verse 7. He was bringing up Hadasha, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had no father or mother. Now the young lady was beautiful of form and face, and when her father and mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter. Now we see she's orphaned, and Mordecai takes her in. He's going to watch over Esther, Hadasha. Okay? Keep going. Verse 8. It came about when the command and decree of the king were heard, and many young ladies were gathered to the citadel of Susa, into the custody of Haggai, that Esther was taken to the king's palace, into the custody of Haggai, who was in charge of all the women. Now, the young lady pleased him, talking about pleased Haggai, and found favor with him. So he quickly provided her with her cosmetics and food, gave her 7 choice maids from the king's palace, and transferred her and her maids to the best place in the harem. She finds favor with the king's eunuch. And what does he do with her? There was something about her that struck Haggai. Put her in a position to gain more, better food, better places. She was there. Well, let's let this thing continue to play out. Verse 10. Esther did not make known her people or her kindred, for Mordecai had instructed her that she should not make them known. Mordecai instructs Esther to what? Be quiet about your heritage. That's exactly right. Don't say a word about it. Don't make it known. Verse 11. Every day Mordecai walked back and forth in front of the court of the harem to learn how Esther was and how she fared. What do you learn about Mordecai here? He was concerned. He walked by. He'd look, trying to make sure she's okay. She's okay. You can see a great care and love that Mordecai had for Esther. Let's keep going. Verse 12. Now when the turn of each young lady came to go into the king Ahasuerus, after the end of her 12 months under the regulations for women, for the days of their beautification were completed as follows: 6 months with oil of myrrh, and 6 months with spices and the cosmetics for women. Now, how many ladies would love that? A year. A year of pampering. A year of this oil of myrrh and all the, would that be a great blessing for you today? Tell your husband, hey, I'm going to be going away a year for beautification. I don't know what. It's a great thing, you know. Spices, cosmetics, every single day. Verse 13. The young lady would go in to the king in this way. Anything that she desired was given her to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening she would go in, and in the morning she would return to the second harem, to the custody of Sashagaz, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the concubines. She would not again go into the king unless the king delighted in her and she was summoned by his name. This is the way it happened. Let's keep moving. Verse 15. Now when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abigail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter, came to go into the king, she did not request anything except what Haggai, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the women, advised. And Esther found favor in the eyes of all who saw her. Now I want you to think about this. What is a quality that you notice about Esther? Humble. Esther is willing to take advice. You can't give advice to people who are arrogant because they don't want your advice. They don't want to listen to what would be best. Mordecai has already told her, whatever you do, don't reveal who your kin are. Now, here's the king's eunuch. And he says, let me tell you what to bring and what pleases King Ahasuerus. And then everyone that saw her, what happened? She found favor. There is something to be said about humility. That's why it's such a big thing in Scripture. That's why it's such a big thing to God. That's why we know that God opposes the proud. You can't tell people with pride anything. They think that they know better than it all. But God's grace, who does it come to? The humble. Well, let's keep going again. Look at verse 15 again. Now when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abigail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter, came to go into the king, she did not request anything except what Haggai, the king's eunuch who was in charge of the women, advised. And Esther found favor in the eyes of all who saw her. Verse 16. So Esther was taken to the king, to King Ahasuerus, to his royal palace, in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. Now I want you to notice, what year are we in King Ahasuerus? We're in his 7th year of his reign. When the book of Esther starts, we are in his 3rd year. So from the time that the book of Esther begins until the time that Esther comes to appear before the king, we got 4 years. It's taken this long to work all of these things out. And so, verse 17. The king loved Esther more than all the women. And she found favor and kindness with him more than all the virgins. So that he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Oh, Esther becomes queen. An orphan Jewish lady that were hated by the world, the Jews. And now guess where she's about to become? Queen of the whole Persian Empire. Now who could have worked that one out? She has these qualities that God always looks for within us, of the humility and those things. She's now becoming queen. You ever thought about why? Because the rest of the book, you're going to see this. But I'm going to tell you a preview. God promised there will be a remnant, and I got to take care of that remnant. The Jews have been decimated. The Jews are in captivity. The Jews don't look like they're going to get out of this thing very, very easily. What does God have to do? He's got to be faithful to that remnant. So Esther, Mordecai are in that remnant. And God has to use Esther to save the rest of the Jews that have been dispersed in the Persian Empire. Treated as lowly, treated as nobodies. That's what this book is about, to show God is faithful to His covenant. He's faithful to His promises in all things. And now, she becomes queen in Vashti's place. Well, verse 18. Then the king gave a great banquet, Esther's banquet, for all his princes and all and his servants. He also made a holiday for the provinces and gave gifts according to the king's bounty. Today, we're going to celebrate Esther's banquet. I mean, can you imagine having a day named after you? All the things that she's got into this deal. Verse 19. When the virgins were gathered together the second time, then Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. Verse 20. Esther had not yet made known her kindred or her people, even as Mordecai had commanded her. For Esther did what Mordecai told her, as she had done when under his care. Once again, the value of humility. She's listening. She's listening. And so now, as we get on into 3, and we're not going to get to it tonight because we don't have time, but as you get into chapters 3 and especially chapter 4, you're going to see Esther and Mordecai's faith come forth. Not loud, but you're going to see their faith come forth. And so, really the point to this degree, not everything is always what it appears. That's another lesson you need to learn, I need to learn. A lot of times we jump on things and it looks like it's this. It may not be that. It may be something else completely different. You know, so when things don't always appear what they seem, you can think of Paul, 2 Corinthians 5:14. We walk by faith, not by sight. And I said 14, 5:7. But that's how we walk, by faith. Let's keep going. Look at verse 21. In those days, while Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthan and Teresh, two of the king's officials, from those who guarded the door, became angry and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. I don't know what happened, but they got these two bodyguards, these two officials, and they're angry at the king. You can imagine what's coming. Verse 22. But the plot became known to Mordecai, and he told Queen Esther. And Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. Do you think it's just by chance that you've got a Jewish guy standing here or sitting by a gate? He hears it. And he tells Esther, the queen of all Persia, there's a plot. There's a plot to kill King Ahasuerus. Now what's going to happen? Verse 23. Now when the plot was investigated and found to be so, they were both hanged on a gallows. And it is written in the book of Chronicles in the king's presence. Guess where all of this was written? In the book of Chronicles. Guess what books we have? 1 and 2 Chronicles. See, it's recorded. This is all part of God's work in the whole thing. And just because the name of God isn't mentioned, you and I ought to be able to see in here that this thing was all God controlled too. And now your two officials that guard the gate, guards the palace entrance, they're now dead. Doesn't pay to plot, because there is a God of heaven. Questions or comments? Kind of a neat story, isn't it? A neat way things are going. Now we got Queen Esther, a Jewish lady, up on the highest height in all of Medo-Persia. Oh, I think that's pretty incredible. Because it's through her God's going to work to save this remnant so they can come out and redo. Any questions or comments? Bell's fixing to go off. Yes, sir.
Just, I think as our nation gets more chaotic all the time, these kind of stories give us hope that God can bring us through chaos and even prosper us.
Yes. That's a great point, Chuck. And yeah, it ought to give us, Chuck said, ought to give us hope that even we're going through a bunch of chaotic times and all the garbage and the hatred and all, and looky here, look what God does. He spares the whole, just one woman. Thank you. Anything else? Okay. Chapter 3 next week, and we'll get that one going. Thank you so much for your... Yes, sir, Jerry? Oh, that's right. We won't. Thank you. Yeah, we'll be in there. Yeah, 2 weeks. Thank you, Jerry. I was already getting excited for next week.